I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Hello, welcome to the Banging Book Club, a fortnightly podcast where we discuss books about sex and gender. My name's Lena Norms.
I'm Lucy Moon.
And I'm Hannah Witten. And this month we read The Gender Games by Juno Dawson.
You know why else this is exciting?
Because we're doing a live event with Juno, but by the time you're listening to this, it will already have happened. So, sad if you weren't there, amazing if you were, the mini-sode interview with Juno will be out in a couple weeks.
Woo! So this is one of those rare occasions where we know we're going to talk to the author.
Yeah.
So when has ever happened before. So
except for my book.
Oh, yeah, apart from Hannah.
I feel like there was another. Oh, no, I remember when the author of Jessie Baring listened to Perv.
Oh, yeah.
And I remember being the first.
He tweeted us.
That was proper awkward because I think I was pretty rude about that book.
Yeah, but there was
also
Jessie.
Pretty sure
Sarah Barnard.
Pretty. I've been on a panel with her now. But she. I think she listened to. The one
almost definitely did. Yeah. Kind of she's coming on
so
my
much
own.
For death of the author, guys. They're all alive and they're on the internet.
Yay!
So that's exciting, and I think there's also going to be questions that we're going to have during this that we get to actually ask the author. Like, how often does that happen?
This is one of the few books where I have lots of questions to ask the author, and I think that's because if you haven't read the book, it's kind of structured as a memoir style thing with also lots of social commentary, lots of commentary on gender. Lots of commentary on social issues and contemporary things that we're all thinking about, the Twitter sphere, many other exciting things.
The subtitle of the book actually, I think, summarises it really well. It says, "The Problem with Men and Women, from Someone Who Has Been Both." Noise reviews. Hannah? I feel like you've got noise inside of you.
That's a really good one.
There we go, that's my noise review.
Mine is not. Mine is, please imagine the sample. Uh-huh, honey. That's a Kanye song.
Okay. We're not as cool as Lucy. Yet again, we are reminded.
Damn.
My noise of you is... That's my...
Love it.
That's my... was me enjoying the way it's written and was me agreeing with it. I gendered it! Fuck!
What, those supposed to be gendered noises?
I mean, they didn't mean them to be. I think one was supposed to be like, I'm enjoying this, and the other one was, I'm certain about what your points.
Yeah. My is all...
That was fucked.
Agreement with all of this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, prerequisite, I met Juno when she was... I'm going to have a lot
James.
Of... I'm going to jet... And,
yeah.
So many pronouns
I met Juno first when she was James.
Yeah. I think as my very limited experience, I think that's the first time that's happened to me when I've met somebody before and after. Or is there a before and after?
I think it's before and after coming out.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Potentially.
Or maybe even her realising as well.
Because I've definitely been friends with people but I've always met them afterwards or before.
Sure.
I thought that was just an interesting point. I don't know if it is.
No, I think it is because I can't think of anyone either who I've witnessed their full transition. There's Riley, who's a YouTuber in the States, and I met her first when she was, she was out as a trans woman, but she was still going by her birth name.
Okay.
And I remember the first time meeting her telling me what she was going to change her name to, and then a couple weeks later, publicly changed her name.
Oh,
but yeah,
really
I didn't
cool.
know her before she was out.
Hannah has an eyelash. I'm just reaching over to grab it. We can continue. This
Lucy just like
there we go.
Got a hand in my face.
Okay,
all we're like tiny rainforest monkeys, just like picking things off each other. So I think Juno sharing her experiences with us and obviously with the world is really cool. And I thought because we're going to have her in the room with us soon and get to quiz her on her experiences, it'd be cool for us to share a bit about our experiences of gender here. So, I had a question.
Bearing in mind, we are three cis women.
We are so cis. But I think there's also stuff that you can relate to your own experience.
Yeah.
And I definitely... It's something where it's like, I think the world looks at somebody like Juno and thinks that they're confused about their gender, when actually reading her book made me feel like gender is also a thing that haunts me and is a thing that controls us all. And I actually ended up learning a lot more about gender from her than she could ever learn from me.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Also worth mentioning that a lot of this book is, I'd argue, quite political, like social, political in terms of, it's kind of almost like some mini essays that create a wider narrative.
Yeah.
Dotted around like memoir bits.
Mm.
So there's like a lot of, whilst it is a like a kind of retelling of how Juno effectively became herself in a way and found herself and her identity. Mm. There's a lot of like criticism of lots of things and like analysis of thoughts and stuff. So there's like a lot of meat in it.
Yeah.
It's kind of like definitely a columnist.
Their
life story.
Because there's loads of stuff on feminism, LGBTQ plus issues.
Mm. The NHS.
Oh my god, the little class bit systems about the NHS. I was just like...
Yeah, class. A bunch about class, a bunch about education.
Yeah.
And the education system, sex education, PSHE.
Yeah.
Even just stuff like, hey, here's some things we could do when we're finding out the sex of a child.
It was also just so beautifully well researched. Like, I loved that every like statistic she threw in there was just like a little footnote of like, this is the book or the like article that it came from, or study that it came from. Lots of stuff.
You would appreciate
about
that.
It's just good. I just admire it because I'm like, that's what I want to be.
Yeah.
I'm good at referencing.
But I think she
the dream.
I think for me, it was like really outward facing. Like, I think she obviously was basing a lot of stuff in her own experience, but looking outwards at how that would impact, like what she's learned about that, how that would impact social constructs.
Yeah.
I really liked it.
So to go off your question, Lena, about our experiences with gender, the first thing that came to my head was that I always was a bit of a tomboy in school, but also very much clung onto that identity and like wanted it to be true. And I very much remember, I don't know, primary school age, like probably pre-puberty, like wanting to reject stereotypically girly things because I thought it was cooler to be one of the boys. Like that was definitely something I experienced. And then not necessarily consciously, but it just kind of happened, like maybe more consciously since like understanding what feminism is and stuff, of like kind of being unashamed by the girly things that I'm interested in, and not necessarily valuing masculinity over femininity, but also just kind of like not kind of like being into girly things because I'm a girl and not being into boy. So many air quotes.
yeah.
But you know what I mean? Like it's kind of, I think when you're at a place where you understand a lot of the theory around gender, you can be a lot more like free in terms of the types of clothes you wear and the types of activities you do and the things that you enjoy.
Because there's a lot less hesitation, a lot less questioning.
Well, it's because you've done the questioning, so then you can just go, ah, this is just something that I like, rather than being like, am I not a real girl because I don't like this? Or, oh my god, am I too stereotypical because I like this? Like, you know, there's a lot of...
I think looking back at it, for me, I definitely had that tomboy phase, and I remember between the ages of 5 and 9 refusing to wear a skirt, like, and it became an issue at school and stuff, and I was just like, I really don't want to wear a skirt, I don't want to wear a skirt. Like, and I think it's because I knew it was the thing I was supposed to be doing.
I'm so surprised by that. Like, Lena now, that is totally reflective in your current personality.
As in, like, I'm just like, no, I don't want to do that, everyone's doing it.
Well, no, just in like, the way you dress.
Yeah.
Like, I completely see that you are, like, a comfort person. why would you as a kid want to have your tights by your knees?
Like, I'm very confused about it.
You have to sit cross-legged all the time in primary school as well.
Yeah. Pervy.
But then I think that's actually quite fine because you can squash the skirt down between your crotch. And you just be like, poof.
Yeah, but boys would always pull it up and it was always like a sexual harassment issue. At the like, no one wants to do that in year two. But yeah, no, I thought it was interesting because I think I did try and like more boyish things, and I think there was definitely a phase where I was like, I want to be a tomboy. I've read about tomboys. They seem cool. They don't seem like they get as much rap. They seem to have more friends. But I think also I was looking to tomboy stuff to neutralise the girliness. Like, I was kind of like, if I'm a bit tomboyish, then maybe people will just, you know, treat me less like a girl.
I remember wanting to be the yellow Power Ranger because it was the yellow and pink ones that were girls, but I was like, I'm not being the pink Power Ranger because also the pink Power Ranger had to wear a skirt, like, on top of the leggings. I don't know. I'm pretty sure that the pink Power Ranger didn't have a skirt.
No, that's weird. No, pink Power Ranger didn't have a skirt. But the pink one in trousers.
I thought the pink one had a skirt and the yellow one didn't have a skirt.
No.
Anyway, I wanted to be the yellow Power Ranger.
Tweenies.
Very different things.
Were you too old for tweenies?
Yeah, a little bit.
Because I think about how fast stuff changed. Yeah, anyway, sorry, right, now we're talking about children's TV.
Okay, my question that I wrote down, teacher Lena in the room, what was your first experience that was impacted by gender and, prerequisite, what was our first conscious experience of gender? So remember, the first experience that you might have experienced that was impacted by gender might not have been your choice, and also you might not remember it.
Can I? Like, can how much does the head fuck with you? The gender thing for me.
Yeah, go on.
It all comes in conjunction directly with my relationship with my sister. So I have a sister who's 2 years younger than me. Sorry, Hannah is just checking if
the pink Power Ranger definitely has a skirt.
Really?
Confirmed. Yeah, 100% has a skirt.
Oh yeah, you're right, it's a mini one.
Yeah, she's got a mini skirt over the top of her thing. But this picture makes me think that the yellow Power Ranger isn't a girl. I don't know.
Well, yeah, the yellow Power Ranger
is female. Anyway, yellow Power I wanted Ranger to be the yellow Power Ranger.
Okay. Right.
I think the yellow Power Ranger is also Asian.
Yeah, I remember.
What?
But you never see their faces.
Are you kidding?
Oh my god, the black Power Ranger is a black man. Anyway.
Oh, jeez. 90s TV shows.
Oh my god,
black
is
Somewhere, somebody's starting to write a brief dissertation on the theory of race as understood through the Power Rangers 80s movement.
Oh, dear. I actually think that's already been written. I feel like I've met someone who's analyzed the Power Rangers. Anyway, right, okay. Okay. My experience. You're right.
Yeah, it's fine. Your experience.
Experience of gender is entirely informed by also my sister, because we grew up at the same time. We're often dressed in the same thing. Mm. Went as a two. Yeah, I was overtly feminine, like incredibly feminine, and I did not question it. My sister was also feminine, but liked different things to me. Mm. So, like, she had, like, 12 baby dolls, which is a story in itself. Like, baby Annabelle's. Whereas I was, like, all into... like, not Bratz dolls, what they call Betty Spaghetti.
Yes!
And, like, Barbies, and had the houses and whatever, and, like, it never occurred to me
Polly Pocket?
Yeah, Polly Pocket.
Fucking love Polly Pocket.
Although I was only allowed it in my friend's houses, my mum wouldn't buy it for me because she said I'd lose it all. my mum was, like, queen spoil sport for, like, children fun. I wasn't allowed in Claire's Accessories or the Disney Store.
I don't think I ever went to the Disney Store.
I like to think it was like a political statement. I don't think it was. I think she just didn't like them.
The small bits and toys, though, there is like when my brother was 6 months old, I shoved a Barbie tennis ball up his nose. We had to go to hospital. I nearly killed him with a Barbie tennis ball.
Sorry. That probably
seriously,
peaked.
Children are evil. That's why I'm not having them. Because I know myself as a child. Imagine having me as
You're
a child.
You're just curious. Wow. But yeah, so there was this dynamic, but there was also... It was so in my brain, and I recognise this, even as a child, I was hyper feminine, but my sister wanted to be more feminine. So when we were gifted stuff, I was as, I don't know why, but if you know, it was like pink versus another colour, Rowan would always get pink. Rowan got the girliest thing. Rowan got the skirt. Rowan got the whatever was the pink backpack. Mm-hmm. I would get blue or green or yellow or some other colour. I was like the less feminine of the ultra feminine girls.
So
it was like but even then, like, I was
so... she was, like, being the hyper performance, and you were like, well, I'm just a girl because I'm near you, so...
Exactly. If we were talking tweenies, she'd always be that pink one, mm-hmm. and I'd always be the, like, I was other.
Other girl.
Other girl. Yeah. Yeah, Rowan's the
is
most...
Is that what your memoir's so going to be called? Lucy, the other girl.
If we're doing Power Rangers, Rowan's pink Power Ranger and I'm yellow.
Yeah. Okay.
So okay. That's how that dynamic worked until we were relatively old, like 12 and 13, well, 10.
Yeah. Like once you get kind of puberty age.
Yeah, once we're
It's so interesting how like your siblings might impact it as well, because I always like understood my gender in relation to my brothers, because I was like, well, I'm a girl because I'm not that.
There was no real really masculine presence. Like my dad wasn't into like hyper masculine like sport.
No, neither mine.
He was into cars. Maybe that's like
as my dad had a Volvo hat, so I think that's pretty gendered. I hope that's pretty gendered.
Sounds like vulva though.
My first experience, or at least first memory that I can remember that I was conscious of gender, but now as an adult I'm like, that was internalised misogyny. But at the time, like 7-year-old me was really into football, played football with all of the boys, was the only girl that played football. I was really good at it, and all of the boys were like, pick me for your team. Like, I was always captain, and I, like, held such pride in that because I wasn't like other girls, and because boys liked me.
Yeah.
Like, my, like, status in terms of myself, this was, like, all internal in terms of, like, how I felt about myself, like, was high because boys liked me and I was better than other girls and I did boy things.
Do you know what's really funny is I feel like I'm learning, I can see how you guys have got where you are now from these really primitive ideas of gender.
Well, every idea we have
as children is like weird, very primitive, isn't it? Very simplistic. And I can totally see how, Hannah, you journeyed through that and like you took aspects of it, but you're obviously mature and adult and don't pit yourself against other women because you want to impress boys.
I'm just like, I'm better than all other women.
But it's like, you felt like you'd
totally
probably like
see that.
Accessed like a higher rank of society. You were like, I've infiltrated.
Yeah.
Like, I, yeah.
But also,
I'm a girl, but an upgrade.
I fancied boys. Like, the first crush I ever remember having was when I was like 4 years old. Yeah. So for me, it was very much like,
that makes a lot of sense.
It was like, boys, I want to be one of the boys, but also I want them all to fancy me at the same time. I want them to accept me and fancy me.
Yeah. Like,
Regina Whitten. Everyone. That's beautiful, though.
Yeah.
Listen, for the record, to show exactly how we are as people, and we just were when we were younger, my first crush, theoretically, was when I was 2. I would dream that I was going flying with this boy, Tim. And was deeply ashamed of it. It was a massive prude and would go bright red and never say, like, stop talking about it to anyone who talked to me about it.
Lucy, a prude since 1994.
Tim was real, not just in your dream.
Yeah, no, he's real. Okay. Tim Griffin, hello. Wow.
You're like, hey, Tim Griffin.
I think we might have each other on Facebook.
Oh, you dreamt you went flying together. Yeah. That's quite cute.
Can I say my first gender experience was my mate Fran was a massive tomboy. So we were born in the same hospital around the same time. Yeah. No. Yeah. So she's my oldest friend. Then when we were about 4 or 5, we were hanging out and she was a proper tomboy. But then I went upstairs and I looked in her drawer and she had a massive drawer full of fake makeup. And my 4 or 5-year-old brain could not comprehend that there was a girl running about playing in trees with all her brothers who also would play with fake makeup when she was in her room. And I was just like, how? That doesn't make sense.
Lucy, imagine people complexly.
Yeah. I'm sorry.
It's interesting though, isn't it, that we're just like not taught, it's almost like our brains have been taught to not be elastic about it.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? And just organised immediately. Because also, I was in a really weird part of Facebook videos, right? Like, last night. And I always get to these weird parts of where the fuck am I? How did I get here? How do I get out? But anyway, there's this big montage of kids finding out whether they were going to have a brother or a sister. And then crying or laughing, depending. So people were like, oh, you're going to have a brother. And they just, like, burst into tears. You know, like, they always want it to be the gender that they are. And if they don't think it's the gender that they are, then they get really upset about it. And I remember finding out that I was going to have a little brother and being really pissed off and being like, oh.
Yeah. I thought we were going to have, it was suggested to me that my mum might have a third kid who was a boy. And I cried and was like, I will leave. I was 8. I was like, I'm done.
We were like, protest.
Yeah, I only wanted girls in the family.
I think it's really interesting that we've spent all this time talking about childhood as well, because in the gender games, Juno talks so much about how like those are such formative years in understanding gender roles and what your gender is and the what's expected of you and everything. Like, you absorb all of that from such a young age, and you know, Juno was saying that from when she was a kid would be like, I want to be a girl.
Yeah, you know, and like just invented this alter ego
for
herself that was like, that's Kate? Kate. And Kate was like everything that she wanted to be.
Yeah.
And she thought that everybody did that. And I think we all had imaginary friends, but I think with the gender thing, it was really, like, she says that she grew up thinking that everybody wanted to be somebody else.
Yeah, because she said that the moment when she realised that...
Not all gay men wanted to be women.
Yeah, that not all gay men wanted to be women was when she's like, oh, shit. I'm a woman. But one thing that she goes into in the book, which is just, oh my god, it pisses me off so much, and I'm so glad she addressed it, is gendered toys.
Yeah, 100%.
Because it is literally a marketing thing. I'm like, they literally just gender toys differently, make a pink aisle and a blue aisle for profit.
Also, I have a suspicion that, like, all of the toy companies are owned by Venus and all of those fucking shaving brands and deodorant brands. I'm sure they're all owned by Shaw, so they can then go on to, like, in our later 20s, like, sell us deodorant that's a pound more expensive. Do you know what I mean? Like, we're already being trained to... I remember, like, having massive conundrums about what kind of lunchbox I was going to get.
Oh, my God, yes.
Pencil cases. Yeah. What a minefield.
I remember going into school and really wanting to play with Kinects, and I'd be the only girl playing with Kinects every day, but then that gave me an internal crisis because I was like, but I'm a woman. What girl?
But apparently that can, like, what you play with at an early age really forms how your brain actually works. So when they say that more men are in engineering, it's because they've been trained from a young age to be in engineering.
Maybe I liked maths because my mum... got me to do puzzles when I was a kid.
Maybe.
Like jigsaw puzzles.
Rowan is insanely good at, like, crosswords, anything that's, like, non-verbal reasoning in inverted commas, because she just did it for shits and giggles for, like, four years as a kid.
I remember a family friend of mine, they've got younger... Their kids are younger than me and my sister, and so it's, like, my mum's friend. Their oldest boy, when they went shopping for lunchboxes, he wanted, I don't know, a stereotypically girly... lunchbox because he wanted it, and his mum is like super chill and was like, yeah, of course you can have that lunchbox. I'm like, A plus, great parenting. But then he gets to school and kids bully him for it, and it's like coming from other kids because that's come from their parents.
Yeah, you can't, you and have, then everybody has to progress together. Yeah,
and then he
just
immediately goes home and it's just like, I don't want that lunchbox, and has to get a new one.
I wish
because he's just like,
it's just it's an argument for less gendered stuff, because, like, there was no middle ground. Like, I didn't want, let's say, I really like dinosaurs, but I didn't go for dinosaur things because it was always very masculine dinosaur stuff. Dinosaurs are gender neutral, as is pointed out very clearly in Juno's book. Like, there should be way more stuff that's not.
There's really interesting pictures that I've seen online of, like, 1970s Lego adverts.
Yeah.
That are really gender neutral and really exciting. Ooh. And then you look at, like, modern day Lego adverts, and there's, like, separate ones. For,
yeah.
I know that this is a audio format, but I'm showing the girls some 1970s Lego adverts.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Got boys and girls in them.
Well,
just like,
Lego is so gender neutral. It's like, okay. It's like Minecraft. Mm.
Theory. It's amazing.
I Margaret Thatcher caused gender. Discuss.
I mean,
if it didn't exist before, she was there. Like, maybe she engineered it.
She caused
capitalism. Like, caused.
I bet she's not even dead.
Yeah. No. But you could. I reckon you can make a tenuous connection there, because Mark. The reason why we've got gendered toys and stuff is for profit, marketing, capitalism. Margaret Thatcher loved capitalism.
Yep, and progress happens much faster in economically stable societies, and she destabilised us economically, arguably more, especially people who had less access to education.
A crisis, yeah, because when a country is in turmoil, often the...
the USA.
But what happens is there's a retreat to traditional values, and often that means men doing one thing and women doing another.
Thus, Margaret Thatcher caused gender.
And thus, Juno knows this but isn't allowed to because she signed a form. And that's why she makes gender a real character in the book. And it's because
gender
is Thatcher. And she's the one who goes to little babies' cots and casts a spell on them at birth. And it's all making sense now, Juno. We won't ask you to tell us because we already know.
And then you get shit like The Handmaid's Tale.
Oh.
Guys.
Margaret Atwood, Margaret Thatcher.
It all makes
Margaret's.
Sense. We all knew gender was a conspiracy, and now it's been confirmed.
What is Margaret backwards, guys?
I'm on it.
Grittamum. That's the secret password to a new world. And we're all invited.
Amazing. Okay, Margaret Thatcher backwards. Are you ready? Rakatatiragram.
I feel like I'm in a cloud atlas.
Can I also add about my own gender experience?
Yeah.
Because I did think about it a lot, I think, when I got a little bit older, like a teenager. Mm. Not only did I, and this has continued throughout my whole life, not only did I pick more feminine toys, I was actively more excited by the more feminine stuff. Mm-hmm. If it was pink, it set off things in my brain. It was like, I fucking love pink. Like, there was something in my brain.
I can see tiny Lucy like, I fucking love pink.
Yeah. Maybe I learned how to swear when I was 8, so like pre-8. So I bloody love pink. Anyway, right.
Goodness, yay. I like pink.
Yeah, I definitely like. Oh my gosh. And even now, I will. Maybe it's just that I like the colour, but I will veer towards more feminine stuff.
I mean, if we want to talk about the pink blue thing, then we have to talk about the Nazis.
Mm. Oh,
because,
yeah.
Because pink was a masculine colour and blue was a feminine colour until the Nazis decided that pink meant feminine because it meant gay, and then you have those pink triangles that. Homosexual victims of the Holocaust had to wear, and thus pink became feminine and blue became masculine.
Fucking Nazis, man.
Literally, the Nazis. And now, I don't want to actually now compare Thatcher to the Nazis.
No. Yeah. But yeah. Now I've mentioned Nazis, we can tag that as a keyword and then our podcast will get higher up in the charts. Everyone's talking about Nazis at the moment.
That's very true. I was thinking about how, should we just thanks, throw Han. In like, yeah. Neo-Nazis, okay. We can add that Nazi.
I had a bit that I highlighted, and so basically, this kind of comes up every time I'm talking or thinking about gender and transgender stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And definitely a conversation that comes out a lot, and I'm trying to find the bit that I highlighted. Here we go. Is that often what we're trying to do in general is, like, deconstruct gender.
Mm-hmm.
And kind of say that, you know, it's not like a man-woman binary, and gender is often like imposed on us, and sex doesn't necessarily have to equal your gender, and things like, you know, boys can be into girly things and girls can be into boy things or whatever. So we're trying to do that, we're trying to deconstruct gender. And at the same time, throughout this whole book, Juno is just like, I want to be a girl. I like girly things. And so you're like, wait a second. But what's happening here? But she addresses it like right at the beginning and says, where gender gets interesting and a lot more complex is when we consider gender as an identity. If gender is a construct, a person identifying as man or woman is, in fact, aligning themselves with a fiction. So she does address the fact that, like, by being a trans person who does, so trans means like across.
Mm-hmm.
So in some cases, some trans people, it's like literally going across the binary, like from one binary to the other binary, which a lot of people use to prove that the binary is real and exists, because trans people experience the binary because they reject the gender they are so much and really like the things that are associated with the other gender.
Mm.
But then obviously there are loads of trans non-binary people that don't kind of like actually do like I wouldn't call it a full transition, but they don't like go, they don't reject one and go for the other, they kind of like sit in the middle or outside. But I don't know, discuss, isn't it? It's just interesting to me.
I'll be honest, sometimes with gender I feel like we still think the earth is flat. I feel like I'm in that point of history where I feel like I'm going to look back at myself at 70 and laugh at myself.
Mm.
Do you know what I mean? I feel like we don't fully have the language to be able to explain gender properly. And I feel like we're all grappling around in the dark. Do you ever feel like that? I always feel like I'm like, I feel like there's something. You know, I feel like not everything is fitting together and everybody seems to still be misunderstanding everybody. And I wonder if there's going to be a way of understanding it in the future that's more coherent. Because that's confusing to me.
Yeah.
And I get what you're saying, but I'm also like, that is a contradiction. But then how can we, you know, it's what I found really interesting about the way Juno talked about her transition was she did link it quite a few times to the idea of safety and passing, and like is very conscious about that and stuff. And that thing of like, I want to look like a woman for me, but I also want to look like a woman because it's safer than looking like a trans person, because looking like a trans person puts me at risk.
Mm-hmm.
And then we talk about surgery and facial surgery and stuff like that. That's really, you know, all of us are like living in a way that's like recognizes the kind of world we're living in, and trans people are also doing that. And, you know, you could think about utopias where it's like, oh, if it was like this and everybody accepted everybody, would we have to do these things? And it's like, maybe not. But yeah, I don't know. It's interesting. The safety thing. Because yeah. I think how many, like,
you know, how many people, to what extent are...
Which is the average chicken or egg, yeah. You know?
Yeah. I try not to think about it too much because, again, I feel like it's a contradiction in terms, but it's not mine to resolve. Mm. It's mine to just listen and be aware of. I think I feel female, but that's just my personal experience, and everyone's got their own personal experience. Like, I think more theory will come out, and I'm sure there'll be a breakthrough moment.
Yeah, like, I feel like we're all jumping over the binary, moving from one place to the other. Are we there? Are we here? Are we transferring? I feel like it's all very 2D, and I'm like, oh, is there a 3D? You know?
Yeah,
I think it still sounds confusing to me, even though I accept all those things can be true at the same time.
Because I feel like the last piece of academia about gender that has been like universally in academia accepted and is used is Judith Butler.
Then, like, there was Cordelia Fine. She won the Warwick Prize for some way. And she wrote, I don't know, Delusions of Gender. We did it in our gender studies class. And it's all about the science of proving that gender's not a real thing. And that was like the breakthrough one after. Because Judith Butler was the theorist who was like, gender's
a performance.
Props a performance. Yeah. And then Cordelia Fine comes in and is like, lol, science, definitely a performance.
Okay.
So that's the one that proved that. And then after that, I don't really know. Then it's all been like social sciencey stuff.
But then that's still two theorists about it being a performance.
Mm.
Nothing beyond that about the identity aspect of gender.
Yeah.
Which is kind of what we're getting at here.
Maybe Gina's it.
Maybe this is it, yeah.
I think, yeah, I don't know. I feel like this is a massive question that, yeah, I'm probably in my lifetime not going to know the answer to.
Yeah.
But my personal... my priority right now is just like listening and like trying to be like being as accepting as I am to everyone hopefully,
because part of me is like, this is really interesting and I want to unpack this more and I want to ask questions and I want to be critical of gender, and being critical of gender is obviously being critical of the binary, but also just being critical of gender as a whole and like all of it, but on the other hand I'm just like, I don't care. Tell me how you identify. That's
chill. Yeah, exactly. Part of it's like, I don't want to overthink it because I recognise it's not my experience and I'll never understand it. So I'm like, tell me what you want to do and who you want to be, and I'll just be like, yeah, chill.
Yeah. Exactly.
Let's go and buy some Twiglets and just get out of it.
I think that needs to be on a t-shirt, Lena. I think this is why I wasn't that good at academia, because I don't have I think it's a very philosophical question in a lot of ways. And like, it's something that will just be like, it's like very abstract and will be contemplated, and I was always like a happy to unpack things that I can fit within parameters, but right now cannot fit this in a parameter, accept it, move on, like that.
Yeah. It's one of those things you can I can see myself falling into a really deep mindfuck hole after like a bottle of wine at a party with somebody I don't know, being like, but if gender's not real, then is religion even real? Because all religion is understood through gender. So if God didn't know that gender didn't exist, is God real? We need to unpack all of this, guys.
And why is God male?
And if gender doesn't exist, then maybe the monarchy shouldn't. And then we should burn everything. You know, like...
Yeah, anyway. Totally
on that note, let's...
That's where conversations always go, is, do we need the monarchy?
Literally. Seriously, had that conversation yesterday.
Let's ask Margaret Thatcher.
Oh, she probably is pro-monarchy. Was pro-monarchy.
Oh, it's good for the economy. That's my great Margaret Thatcher impression.
Okay.
Anyone was wondering.
How do we feel Juno did with treating her previous male privileges? Because I thought that was really interesting.
Yes.
Because it's actually something that didn't really... It did kind of occur to me, but also like was something that in my process of learning more swept under the carpet and was like, no, this person is a woman. I'm accepting them as a woman. I'm, you know, that's what I'm doing. So I never thought about the whole like, oh... were there certain male privileges that she benefited from when a man? and what can she let. So also something I wrote down that's really interesting about that, she says that she saw Carrie Bradshaw and immediately didn't see the obstacles to becoming her, and goes, is that because of my male privilege? Is that a thing of like, oh, I see something so I can just be it, nobody's gonna stop me, and is that part of my privilege?
Whereas part of womanhood is constant self-doubt.
Constantly being like, I can never be that person. He's like, I'm gonna be Carrie Bradshaw, the end.
I think it's also interesting that Juno's writing from a point of incredible hindsight, plus having had experience with being notable / famous on the internet, on social media, with a shit ton of Twitter trolls.
Yeah.
So you really, I think personally, I don't know if you guys found this, that you really feel that coming through the writing. Is this this experience and the preempting of people criticizing every chapter of this book based on privilege?
Oh yeah, she's constantly like, here's my point, hold on a second, bear with me, because she knows, she preempts like all
but
of the
but even addresses
comebacks.
The people who are gonna do it, you know, addresses them.
But also I think because of the amount of like shit that she gets online and just in general, there was definitely a no fucks given.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at Burrow.com/ACAST. That's Burrow.com/ACAST. Burrow.com/ACAST.
I find it really hard to be that like hard on one side, and I know we're having I know we're having a lot of talks online at the moment about like many sides and da 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 da, and it was really exciting, I think, to see Juno just going, this is the fucking side I'm on, it's the right side, like, yeah, screw any of the rest of you. I'm going to try and convert some of you, but also I recognise where there is no point and you're all fucking pieces of shit. that's the tone I got from it. I was like, this is nice.
I think what's funny about that as well is, like, before I made videos on the internet, but being as, in inverted commas, woke, as maybe we all are, if I'd read this book, I would have been like, oh, there's a bit of attitude in that, like, that's a bit unnecessary, da da da, you don't, thinking you're right. But actually, it's, I now, as someone who makes stuff and gets a lot of criticism when they're trying,
I
think
feel like
it's
that
a real
attitude comes from tiredness.
Yes, exactly. It's a, I've done my best, I'm still doing my best, and I'm not perfect, and I need you to acknowledge that for us to progress and for me to be able to express opinion anymore. I just need to be firm with my opinion, so that people stop holding me up as a, like, the divisive voice on trans issues or whatever. There's a definite, like, I have to stop giving a fuck about pandering. And I have to use the knowledge I've gained and the experience I have to share what I think is the truth. And
do
I really
think,
respect that.
Going back to the privilege thing, do we think that Juno learnt how to be that strong and assertive in her writing because of being a man and being raised male?
Maybe. I mean, it's just one of those things that's like, we will never know.
Because I like to tiptoe, because I don't like to offend.
Because
them, like,
I know women like that who are just like, fuck you all.
I do, yeah, but Yeah, they're few and far between. Mm.
But they're not... Yeah, I don't know. I think that, like...
People think that we're like that.
Yeah, I don't know.
Whereas I'm not at all, I pander.
I did think it was really cool in the book about the checking privilege.
Mm.
Yeah.
But then also checking her privilege in terms of access to the private care, because mm-hmm. Juno talks about going private because the NHS waiting lists were so long.
Mm-hmm.
But then also having an NHS in the first place here, like, she could have got that treatment for free just for mm-hmm. waiting, but like in places like the US you have to wait and you have to pay.
Yeah,
I'm not about that life, man.
No.
Also, Juno acknowledges her privilege in terms of getting to where she is now in her industry, which is very interesting, because there's that first... There's basically a whole chapter on it, of how she networked loads, but because she was a gay man, people were really, like, receptive mm-hmm. to it.
And just said yes to every opportunity, yeah, and said people yes to every didn't opportunity. Think it was pushy.
Yeah, it was, and also within the stereotype of gay men, it's kind of implied she played up to it a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
As, like, I don't know how many people... I've met a couple of people in our respective industries who are like sassy PR people who, and I feel like that to an extent they probably play up to it because they know it makes them seem really friendly and like trustworthy and stuff. Anyway, I don't know how true that is, but there's a really interesting discussion of it in this book.
I'm just having a look at the chapter titles and I was just like, oh yeah, do we want to talk about Juno's sex life as a gay man and how, like,
oh my god, yeah, we have to talk about some sex, don't we? Banging Book Club.
So in depth. And yeah. I love the fact that she has all of those pages being like, Mum, Dad, skip to this page. And then you just turn again. It's like, nope, seriously, please don't read on.
Yeah. It's like, in the book, is it split up like that?
Yeah.
Oh, so I listen to the audio book.
What does it do in the audio book then?
She just says it.
Yeah, in the book, it's like this. Mum, Dad, stop reading now. It's about to get saucy. Please turn to page 305 immediately and do not read the following chapters. And then you turn the page and it's like, and it's just like the same, like, I do not believe you have stopped reading, Mum, Dad. I mean it. Seriously, why would you put yourself through this? And then it just says, this page is left intentionally blank to fool Juno's parents. And then it gets onto all of the sex, which is interesting. Okay, so the thing that came out of the sex chapters to me that was the most interesting was Juno's theory about if you are LGBT in some way, you've been taught a certain thing from perhaps media, society, parents, whatever, that you should be straight and you should be cis. And if you're not, you somehow punish yourself.
Mm. And out of shame.
Yeah, and Juno's form of punishing herself was having a really unhealthy sex life that put her health at risk a lot of the time.
Yeah.
Like her physical health and also her... like mental health.
I think it's well-being. The fuck it thing of just like the shame. I don't know.
I don't know if I buy this theory, but it's interesting, and that's what she says, think it's that, true. That she experiences. Yeah,
from minor personal experience, I'd say that's very true.
Yeah.
Although I wouldn't attest to like having the same experience.
And,
as Juno,
and apparently, obviously. There's also like a huge drug problem in the LGBT community as well.
Mm. Well, she mentions one night she goes on where everyone's off their tits on MD.
Mm.
MDMA, pills, ecstasy. For those of us who do not use my personal terminology. Off their tits on MD in a club, in a sex club. Mm. Which is, if you know about MD, logistically impressive. but also, like... Yeah, that for me as a scene is like, I can totally visualise that, but paints a really odd picture of what a... kind of clubbing / sex scene is like in that community.
But it made me think a lot of have you seen that, like, at the National Theatre's the Angels in America? Have you seen this one?
No.
So it's like a really famous play about like the AIDS epidemic in the US, and lots of the commentary on it is kind of trying to say, if you criminalise like homosexuality, all these other things are going to come into it. They're also illegal. That you know, like
you black market,
you push it underground, and then it opens. it then becomes a market that the black market can sell to, because you're already having to hide really in those spaces.
Yeah.
And then people go, oh, gay people are criminals. And it's like, well, no, you've put, like, in the same way that you push... you criminalise abortion goes in the ground.
Yeah.
You know, like, it's and it's really interesting, like, and it links it with the law, and, like, there's this lawyer who's secretly gay. It's really good if you want... Andrew Garfield.
Yeah, I was going to say, is it all in Andrew Garfield?
Yeah, and I was two rows from the front, and I was like, Andrew Garfield!
Where is it? Is that in London?
National.
Oh my god, I've seen pictures. So gonna pester my cousin.
One of
to take
the
me.
Best things I've ever seen.
Is
in
it two parts, isn't it?
It's 6 hours long.
Oh my god.
You gotta commit to it. But it's a lot of Andrew Garfield, so what can you do?
It's
genuinely some of the best acting I've ever seen in my whole fucking life. Anyway, not the point.
Sorry.
Right. But yeah, no, the sex was interesting. And I think, I don't know.
So to me it was just from the perspective of her being someone in the public eye and sharing something so personal. Like that was just like, wow, brave.
Yeah.
I mean, I know I've said brave, and she also in the book talks about being called brave all the time. But I'm not saying you're brave for being trans, do you know? I'm just saying you're brave for sharing that much about your personal life in a book.
Yeah. And also, but then it's all with a fair bit of hindsight. She was talking about instances kind of before the age of 25 a lot of the time.
Yeah.
And I don't know how old she is now.
She's got like...
in her 30s, but...
I don't know if she's 30 yet.
But also, it feels like, I must imagine there's a bit of distance, because it must feel like a different person in some ways.
Yeah,
this was a person who was really hurting. The she was called James, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, she probably, they're all a part of her, but feels a great distance to the James
that's
character
true.
Almost, I'd imagine. This is all assumptions.
I think as well, like the description of her being raped but not recognizing it as rape, and one of the reasons she cites is because she was a man and she didn't think that men got raped.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, holy shit, like, that's...
But also, I wouldn't be surprised if that scene that she described is just like a lot, like, quite commonplace.
Yeah.
And also commonplace that the victim is like, doesn't recognize it for what it is as well.
Also, the victim probably has many more experiences similar to that off those kind of dating apps and dating sites. I sound like a newsreader when I say those kind, like Grindr and stuff.
That, like, the fetishizing of, like, the trans body as well was really interesting.
Yeah.
And, like, talking about how many, like, straight men want a finger up the bot.
Oh, God,
I think was the phrasing.
Really,
or as Catelyn Moran would say, going up Big Tesco.
Oh, my God, yeah.
It was a really funny...
That was really interesting. And, like, hearing her experiences on Tinder, like... somebody who is female but explicitly says, like, I'm trans. Have you ever come across somebody trans on Tinder?
No. Not out trans, like, doesn't say in their bio, or...
I have once or twice.
In inverted commas, passed, so I don't know. On the one hand, you'd be like, oh, my safety, don't want to disclose that I'm trans in my bio, because people might swipe right in order to harass you, or in order to meet up with you and then, like... physically harass you. Or do you do it so there are no surprises for the person that you're, like, wanting to go on a date with? Like, there's...
It's a minefield. Because it's one of those things that you want, I feel like, hopefully in 50 years that won't be a problem. But while you're in this world,
yeah,
you have to recognize.
Because that was something that Emily also talked about in the mini-soda that we did about disabilities.
Mm-hmm.
So it was
like
about
disclosing
the disability in the dating profile. Mm-hmm. And she said that she does that so that no one's surprised when she turns up in a wheelchair on a date. And they're like, oh, I booked a restaurant that has stairs and no lift.
Yeah, yeah.
That
makes sense. Oh, my God.
Which is, like, similar, but obviously, like, slightly different kind of situation in terms of, like, what
really
do you disclose on social media.
Just got a funny quote. I was like, do you notice something really funny about having sex as a trans woman? We've already talked about the objectification of trans bodies, but it seems that these chaps who find her on Tinder and want her to fuck them with a penis don't even want most of a trans body. There is a fundamental mismatch in what I want as a woman, a good rogering, and what they want. Also, it seems, a good rogering.
Oh my God,
okay. I absolutely lost it.
So I fucking loved that bit because my boyfriend uses the word rogering all of the time, and I'd never heard it before. And I was like, is this some southern thing?
It's like
who uses like rogering?
It's like a very traditional sailor man.
Yeah.
It's like, feels almost naval.
Yeah.
So as soon as I came across that bit in the book, I took a picture of it and sent it to him, being like, oh, the people use rogering.
The second part of that is, I haven't gone to all this trouble to be a woman in order to fuck men with a penis. Yeah. It's like, yes, this is evidently a situation.
Oh, God. No, I did like that bit. Roger England.
Poor Rogers in the world.
Aww.
I mean...
Who was the first gay Roger and who made him the captain of the ship?
I would love to. Anyway. Roger.
Also, the interesting... Really interesting what Gina classifies as self-harm sex. Because I would argue some of it wasn't. Like, choking, for example, I don't think is a harming form of sex.
But it's not hard to choke in.
Yeah. Obviously, it depends on the way you're doing it, but, like, I think that's a very conventional kink thing that you see all through.
I read
it
more as, like, when she's talking about that, like, more talking about, like so say self-harm sex would be, like, having sex when you definitely know you don't want to have sex. Yeah. Or having sex with people you wouldn't want to have sex with. Or having sex...
Yeah, because it can also be having unprotected sex. Self-harm.
Yeah, but she just did this big list of like of weird shit she'd heard of and done that had qualified in her books as like very questionable kink.
Yeah. Oh yeah, because it's what crosses over into like harmful. Yeah.
But I very much agree with what she said about kinks, shall we say, that are accepted are called preferences, and kinks that aren't accepted are fetishes. Which I think is really interesting, and I think that kind of stuff came up in Perv, which we read last year.
I refer to Perv more than I refer to any other book we've read in this book club.
Really? Even though it wasn't our favourite.
I don't think I even finished that one.
It taught me a lot.
But that's the thing, I think Perv is very much like, it gives you a foundation in order to discuss loads of stuff to do with like sexuality and preferences and fetishes.
I'm glad we read that actually, because it even came in handy when we were talking about Lolita and talking about like preferences there and like paedophilia and then when we were talking about Middlesex. So, okay, something that I found really like, oh, I need to go away and think about that, was facial feminization. So like having surgery on your face to make it more female, and then immediately in my like arguably trained female brain, I was like, but what if my face isn't feminine enough? And it's like the surgeon was just discussing and like listing what made a face female.
It's so interesting, and I was like that what? They can pinpoint.
Yeah, and they can pinpoint things. Like the kind of brow you have and stuff. And then I was like, oh my God, what if I don't have a female face? What's wrong with me? Oh my God. And then I was like, oh my God, now we've had body positivity. Do we need face positivity? And like, and then I was thinking about like all of the people that I know that are women and like, do they all subscribe to that or not? And then, I don't know. It was very stressful. Did you feel weird about...
No.
I mean,
it didn't affect me personally. I think I felt weird about it as a concept.
Really? I was quite... Yeah, I feel like I was quite aware of it. I've gone through any issue I have in my face, I've thought about enough and just got over. Because I'm like, it's my face.
Yeah.
I have one and it does really good things otherwise. But in terms of adjusting one's face to look a certain way... the only time recently I've ever been really alarmed by that is hearing about one friend who gets a bunch of face fillers, and it's not obvious. So you know how lip fillers you can be.
I think
be
I know
like,
which friend.
You know,
yeah.
And like there's lip fillers where you're like, oh, they've got very plump lips, like they've got lip fillers. I had this realization that I might not know what my friend's face really looks like. That was scary.
Yeah.
then what's like really looks like? Because you've probably, like, what if, like, if I dyed my hair blonde, and then you'd be like, I never know what your real hair looks like.
I mean, you've seen a blonde hair before.
Yeah. And, like, also there's people our good friend Linda Blacker, never seen her hair any other colour than red, and I do wonder sometimes what her real hair colour is. It doesn't weird me out in the same way, but I think it's because a face is so full of personality and expression in a way that hair just like lies you know around you.
I think we're missing the point about gendered
sorry gang,
got distracted both.
No,
both.
It's okay, but I think it is telling actually we've gone on quite a lot of tangents on this podcast being like this is a thing and we're always referencing ourselves or other cis friends. And I'm also kind of thinking like, how much is that relevant, or like how much can we actually make those comparisons? I don't know.
Yeah.
I think we should... I just wanted to put that out there questioning ourselves and
but then I think
discussion.
It's also, like, there's not... In some ways, the trans experience is everyone's experience and nobody's experience. Like, nobody's... We're never going to be able to know how Juno really feels or what... But we can only relate it to how she's explaining it to us. And she's explained to us in the terms of gender.
Yeah. We're trying to empathise.
Yeah. I don't know.
And unfortunately, I don't know. Majority of the people we're around are cis and straight, maybe. But Anyway, this is all right. Back to faces.
Yeah.
I think it feels weird to me, but I don't know. Juno's just kind of like a great author, so even if I have uneasiness with the concept and the idea of facial feminization, the way that she explains it and how it affects her, I'm like, I'm on board. Go you.
I think it's more like feeling like yourself.
Yeah.
So I think like if somebody wants to change the way their face looks to feel more like them, then I can't, there's no way of me knowing in what spirit somebody's changing their face for. Even if it's just for them in their mind to look better, there's no way of me knowing their motives.
Is like, there, you know, when, male masculinization facial surgery?
Definitely. I've got a trans
you can like widen friend, your jaw and stuff.
Yeah, who had something done. I don't think it was just testosterone
jawline.
But yeah, it was something to do with his jawline. But yeah, this was like nearing a decade after he'd officially transitioned.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
So anyway, I was wondering if I'm normalising the reason I'm not, maybe the reason I'm not affected mentally by the idea of Juno having surgery is because I subconsciously want her to look more feminine for her, so she passes, for me, so I don't revert to like being that person who looks at someone in the street and then like looks away. Like, am I doing that because I'm uncomfortable with someone looking more masculine?
Other people's comfort as well. Yeah,
Yeah.
I don't know. It's one of those things where we're like, how can we can't know, you know? And I don't know. It's hard.
I can't know.
Basically, I think a lot of people's discomfort with people who are trans is that it does inherently, by nature, question everything that you are, and that's why it gets people's backs up so much, because they're like, "You want to be a woman? Well, what's a woman?" Like, you know, like, and then
the basic thing
it's actually amazing because it throws up all of these conversations that everybody has to have, and like by people being open about it and wanting to talk about it, it makes the rest of society go, "Oh, holy shit!" And she's right. Like, it holds everybody. It's got a chokehold on everyone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
you know. I also think it's interesting that part of her experience she describes is feeling less ashamed to be single, and maybe attributing that to her male privilege as well, or like having always been used to that, and also not having a ticking biological clock or being expected to have a ticking biological clock, which are things that in some ways people call female experiences, but then at the same time it's not really a female experience, it's more like it's the way people treat you. Like,
yeah, and that's a big discussion.
I've moved through the world from a very young age, people expecting me to have a biological clock and expecting me to have children. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I guess I get it all the time from, like, my family.
Mm. Like, I'm so glad I'm not at that point
like
yet.
Like, grandkids.
Thank you, my cousin is having a baby recently. It's put everyone's minds at ease.
That's good.
But it's something I'm very aware from hearing other people talk about it, that that's coming for me soon.
Oh man, every time you're a bridesmaid in a fucking wedding, everyone wants to talk about your ovaries, and I'm like, it's not even my wedding!
That's so annoying. I can't imagine how annoying it is to get married and be so happy to get married and then have the follow-on for the next year to 10 years of, so, like, you know what's next? Like, that expectation discussion. Cool that it's addressed.
Yeah. Any closing thoughts?
There's so much to bloody discuss in this book.
Yeah.
We've covered maybe 30% of the topics.
Yeah.
But we've got Juno in a few days.
Exactly.
So, a question that I'd written down that was Lucy's idea was, is this a memoir or a manifesto?
Half and half. Yeah.
It's kind of, you know, like how to be a woman is very much like, it's the same. It's like, let's go through my life and things that have happened to me and then use those experiences to go, right, here's an essay on this topic.
Exactly. But it does flow very well. It is a whole project. Like, don't read it expecting it to be like the Moore Anthology. Mm. Like, it's a cohesive body of work.
Yeah, definitely. Because I think you don't read it like you'd read essays, like picking and choosing.
You can't do that.
Because this is very chronological, but also she guides you through the book in terms of like, but we'll get to that shortly. Or like, as we discussed, So it very much like takes you through it all.
It feels like it's one thought process with lots of like,
so many tangents.
Many stops on the train line of gender.
Can I also add a quick observation of, had no trouble, like, in terms of I've only ever known Juno as Juno, thus I'd never messed up pronouns or anything, beyond reading this book, because there's so much of it talking about her as James, mentally I keep misgendering her.
Really?
Because I, because of, and now I'm
because
like,
you were empathizing with James.
I keep, yeah, and it's very frustrating.
I've asked her about that, and because I've got a video on my channel of me and her talking about her new book, but when she was James, and when she transitioned, I was like, do you want me to change the title of the video so it says Juno Dawson and not James Dawson? And she was just like, nah, I was James then, like, keep it. And I think whenever she is referencing herself before her transition, she uses male pronouns, from what
I
know,
think
most
from
of the
her
time.
Old books as well, it says James Dawson.
No,
and this
some,
is also
some,
known as Juno
some have
Dawson,
been Juno reprinted Dawson. And oh, really? It just says Juno Dawson on them now. Yeah,
that's cool.
Well, I'll yeah.
Okay. Would we have sex with this book?
I feel like because it's part memoir, this book is Juno, and like, I'm in a relationship, so I can't have sex with Juno. And also, like, Juno would have to consent to that too.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, it's weird, isn't it? When
also,
the book is the person.
Also, Juno's straight, so she doesn't fancy women, and I'm straight, so I don't fancy women.
This is very logistical.
So I'm just.
So
I'm,
you just have like a nice girl. Like, you'd have like a sleepover with face masks,
and we would discuss sex.
Yeah. Okay. You 100%. Tell. You tell this book about.
We would
sex.
Talk about Rogering.
Yeah. Would I have sex in this book? It's weird because we're gonna meet the author.
Yeah, I know.
Right? Really odd about
that's
that.
That's why I suddenly just had a like. But it's the
I
book. It's not you.
Yeah.
But the thing is, they're so intertwined. This is a memoir
okay,
in some ways. Go for it.
I would drink 4 Jägermeisters with this book, lie under the stars, and talk about whether we need the monarchy with this book.
That's a great
and that, for me, is more intimate than having sex.
Yeah. I think, do you know what I'd actually do? I think I'd go on the really interesting nights out with this book.
Is this the first memoir we've read? Because
it has to be a girl.
No,
it's
still fictional. Because I'm just
wasn't a memoir.
No,
yours was very factual.
Yeah, because I'm just thinking,
I'm trying to think of
because book. We've read, because most of the books that we agree with or that we really like, we're like, fuck yeah, I'll have sex with it. But I'm like, it's interesting because it is a memoir and we're like, we know the author, we're about to meet the author. We're just suddenly just like, ah!
Screw yourself over there.
Are we allowed to say that?
Yeah, I don't know. I endorse the book, thus I would have sex with it.
That's fair.
Yeah.
In this analogy.
No, I feel like I just go for a drink
the front
with
cover.
Book.
Can I just say that I love
it's great.
The
it
front
is very.
Have you seen the GIF ad where all of the
yeah.
things change?
Oh, no.
So it's like a, and I think they should make like Juno Rubik's cubes, and you can turn around all the parts. It'd be amazing. Thanks for listening to the podcast. Don't forget to follow us on Twitter at Banging Book Club. Next month we are reading The Virgin Suicides by Geoffrey Genedies.
Our first repeat author.
I know, 2 times, Geoffrey. Do as well this time. To be fair, this is my favourite book.
Two very different books.
Yeah.
This The Virgin Suicides, if you haven't been listening, I always say this every month, but if you haven't been reading the books along with us, this is the time to read the book, like The Virgin Suicides. Oh my god.
I'm very excited to read it the first time.
So I always say I like classics and poetry. That's basically what I read outside of
this
fun and games. So, yeah, well excited to read a classic.
Yeah, ready to Roger it.
Ready to Roger that book.
I don't know what it's about, but if
actually,
it's about Rogering
virgins,
I'm like,
yeah.
Stay tuned for in a couple weeks where we will release the recording of the live event that we're doing with Juno in a few days.
Yeah.
What else do we need to do? That's it, really.
That's it. We don't have that much admin this time, I think.
Don't forget to subscribe to our podcast on iTunes and
leave us a review
or rating if you fancy. That would be great.
Tell us how bad we are at being good feminists.
Yeah. And use the word Roger lots.
Yeah, oh my god, yeah. Can we have a competition?
Give us Rogers out of 10.
Oh my god.
Okay. See you later, guys.
Bye.
Bye.
Nailed it.
Oh, done.
Stretch.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.